This is Robert Martellacci, the Mindshare Learning Report, Canada's learning and technology e-magazine. Our March special issue is focused on U.S. ed tech space, and I have the good fortune of having a Mindshare Learning moment with Betsy Corcoran, EdSurge's founder and CEO, previously executive editor for Technology Converge at Forbes Media, and an award-winning staff writer for The Washington Post and Scientific America. Thank you for joining me this morning, Betsy.
Thank you so much, Robert. I'm thrilled to be on your podcast.
Well, I'm so impressed with your credentials and you making a shift in the 21st century into a very vibrant space. What inspired you to launch EdSurge, and how long ago was that?
Well, we just celebrated our fifth anniversary.
So congratulations.
We're very, very happy about that. Thank you. We've had 5 years of putting out newsletters. We have one newsletter, of course, that's aimed at tech entrepreneurs, one that's aimed at teachers. So it's almost 500 newsletters altogether when you add them up. And it's been pretty exciting. You know, you're absolutely right. I spent really 25 years of my career writing about the latest and greatest in technology. And what I came to feel so passionately about is that unless we get education right, unless we really are thinking hard about how we're helping our kids figure out their lives and figure out the future, that, you know, everything else kind of grinds to a halt. So 5 years ago, I kind of made the momentous and honestly very frightening choice at that point to quit my job at Forbes to get into education technology. And actually, I did that 6 years ago because I spent more than a year sort of learning about education, working as a volunteer IT person in one of our local public schools.
Very cool.
And really trying to understand what was going on. And then I saw entrepreneurs coming together, starting to think about the ways that technology might address some issues in education, and felt that there was a need for two things. One was sort of a water cooler, you know, that place, and you've done this so beautifully in
Thank
Canada
you.
As well.
Thank you.
That place where you can, where people can meet each other, where they can learn what each other's doing and understand some of the issues. And then the second piece is that, you know, particularly 5 years ago, there was nothing remotely like a Consumer Reports for education technology. And just as in Canada, schools were already starting to buy technology. And as right. charming and wonderful as every vendor is, they are interested in selling their products. And so what we set out to do was to try to write in an unbiased and fair way about when is a piece of technology useful, what's the context, what's the actual problem it solves. And so today, what we are really 100% focused on as a company is answering that question, which is for any particular school, given what their school is like, given what their kids are doing, given what their instructional needs are, then, only once you understand those questions, then you ask the question, what's the right piece of technology that will really support those teachers and support the mission of the school? And so we do that through writing, much like you do. We do it through conferences, and we're excited to be a part of your conference this fall, and I think you're going to be a part of a conference.
Likewise. I look forward to the partnership.
Yeah. And then we also have a tool and a program that we're starting to build out in the U.S. called Concierge, where we work with individual school leaders to try to help them identify, well, what's a good short list of products that I should consider, but only once they have really done a deep dive into that question of what is it that we really need.
Well, that's a wonderful analogy you gave earlier about the Consumer Reports of education technology, and kudos to you for the wonderful job that you've done in really raising the bar and creating greater awareness across the U.S. landscape and well beyond it in trying to deliver the best possible solutions to education and really push that needle forward in supporting student success. And so, again, congratulations. How does that make you feel?
I'm really thrilled. I mean, you are actually a pioneer in all of this. And so I am really, really humbled to have you say that. So thank you.
Well, you know, when you mentioned your fifth anniversary, I'm was thinking back to when I got into the space, and Mindshare is celebrating its 15th anniversary this year. And so pretty exciting time. Time flies when you're having fun. And I do feel like a bit of a grandfather of EdTech, and having worked for Kevin O'Leary on Shark's Tank. I spent 3 years launching their school division in Canada back in the late 90s. So, you know, it's amazing to see what has transpired, the acceleration, I'd say, in the last 5 years, coincidentally, since you've been in the space, has more than tripled the pace at in the last 10, I would say. So, and that's a good segue.
I think we've seen a lot of factors come together.
Right, right. And that's so a good segue into that conversation about...
Yeah, I'm sure you've seen this in Canada as well, but 5 years ago, certainly the United States was still in the midst of recession. At the same time, we had, so on the one hand, you have a lot of highly educated people who candidly had more spare capacity than is actually the case today in some cases. We had, number two, the evolution of a whole set of tools that made it so much cheaper to start a company than it has ever been in the history of the world. I mentioned to you that year that I spent learning about education
right.
technology, and I had the fortune to meet a number of people who had started education technology companies in the late 1980s, early 1990s. There weren't a lot of successes back then, and I remember having lunch with one woman who told me, yeah, we sold our company for something like $40 million, and I said, my gosh, that's great. That's the biggest success story I've heard. And she said, well, except that we spent $80 million to build it. And that was a very familiar theme for companies
Absolutely.
That were started at that point in time. So fast forward around 2009, 2010, you had you still had a lot of unemployment, certainly in the U.S. You had this abundance of tools that made it possible to start a company for very little money. Number three is we had, you know, Teach for America has actually been an enormously powerful force in the United States. We've had a lot of kids graduate from interesting universities, do 2 years in the classroom, emerge, not sure that the teaching was the right calling for them, but still passionate about education and really interested in how they could try to solve problems in a different and perhaps scalable way. You had this kind of new community of people. You had the charter schools that
right.
have been tasked oftentimes with trying to solve really challenging problems. How do you really help kids who confront so many challenges in their lives, from not getting enough food to eat to not having a stable home environment to not having people who kind of encourage and really inspire them in education. So you had the emergence of the charter schools, which have fewer constraints on their choices of how they do things than the traditional public schools in the United States. And and I think also finally this real sense of urgency on part of so many people in the United States, because they could look at the standardized test results coming out of international organizations such as PISA, and were kind of frightened by where they felt the United States students were showing up on these PISA tests. And then the last factor, of course, was the Obama administration coming in very determined to make a difference in education, and the leadership of President Obama and Arne Duncan was also really powerful in terms of making available dollars to encourage teachers, schools to think a little bit differently about how they're educating kids. So I think you really had around the 2009-2010 timeframe a convergence of so many factors that made it a very interesting moment and a moment when companies could actually emerge and people could start talking about, well, are there other approaches and things to solve some of these genuinely deep, deep, deep questions?
Absolutely. It sounds like a perfect storm.
I hope it was perfect. We at EdSurge have been spending the last couple of months looking at some of these trends. Sneak peek, we're actually going to start publishing this material next week. And I think that we're still figuring out what are the best ways to address some of these issues. There is no one in the United States, I think, who can say that poverty is not deeply, deeply linked in education issues, just because people are sort of starting at tech tools doesn't mean that they are ignoring the really profound issues of poverty that shape so many students' lives. But we are hoping that there are opportunities to open paths for students, give them a chance, help teachers really support them. And at the end of the day, buy teachers time, right? Because the thing that we know that great teachers do is they inspire us. And if you said
absolutely
to, 100 people, name the teacher who made an impact in your life, we all have someone. We all have
absolutely
someone who was that person who showed us that our lives could be different, that we could control our lives, that we were special, that we had a gift or a talent, someone who believed in us. That's what teachers do. That is so extraordinary and so special. And so I think that in the best of all worlds, we hope that these technologies will give teachers enough time, take away some of the more mechanical work, or give them support in ways that gives them that opportunity to really shine as a source of inspiration for kids everywhere.
Well, that's an exciting time. I often talk about the digital revolution that we are in at the moment, which really creates a lot of opportunities to disrupt the system as it was and bring in some innovative learning platforms and apps, and really, speaking of buying teachers time, creating those efficiencies and just in time, critical data points that teachers really need to make a greater impact in the lives of students. And, and it's that technology infused pedagogy that we talk about, who Michael Fullan has inspired us, being a Canadian and world renowned in his research. But maybe we can talk a little bit about that and the commitment, needs to begin with moving the system forward. And Obama came out with some bold statements recently and created some new programs along with Arne Duncan, who's now passed the baton, I believe.
That's right. So Dr. John King is the nominated Secretary of Education in the United States, someone who has a very, very deep education background and who himself had been inspired. He says that there are teachers that without them he would not, have created the career and the life for himself that he did. So he is deeply grateful and deeply appreciative of the role that teachers play. I think one of the, there's an interesting new program that we just read about this week called Open eBooks that the White House is trying to inspire and encourage, schools to use OER, open educational resources materials.
Awesome.
That's been getting a lot of traction. The United States, and I'm sure that the same is true in varying degrees in Canada, but in the United States we are continually in a little bit of a tug of war between the role that the states and local communities play in education versus right. the role that the federal government plays in education. And we're certainly seeing a swing back to more localized control. There's tremendous power and opportunities in that. I think the federal government has been a galvanizing factor for the last couple of years, and it's probably appropriate that sort of some of the focus shifts back to the states and local communities now. But it is always a fascinating sort of balance of power here in the U.S.
Absolutely.
I think it's similar in Canada, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, the federal government introduced an act, you know, many, many years ago, giving education powers to the provinces. So it's provincially mandated, but the native schools are funded by the federal government. And the new Prime Minister, Trudeau, is very much supportive of the innovation agenda. So we anticipate funding coming available. We're talking about resurrecting the network of innovative schools, which a previous government had canceled. And so it's about that sharing and getting beyond pockets of innovation that we see, that we're really excited about in Canada. I'm here today at the unveiling of this distance learning center that's dedicated to delivering online interactive courses across the province of Saskatchewan because of the regional challenges, a lot of farmland, a lot of small pockets of population. So they've been innovative. And oftentimes you see this innovation, you know, is the mother of invention, right? Where, you know, there's a greatest need for it. And I've not seen technology used the way that is being used here. And some of the dynamic courses that are being taken and delivered by some really passionate teachers. So, you know, we have our, you know, as much as we're neighbors, there are nuances in how we deliver our education programs here, and same in the U.S. And it's a good segue into the whole startup space that, you know, there's been a flurry of startups in North America, and there's quite a healthy startup population in Toronto and Vancouver and now, you know, Calgary and Edmonton. And maybe, Betsy, in the remaining couple minutes, we can talk about advice you might have for startups from Canada looking to make it in the United States.
Sure. Well, the first and probably most important piece of advice for a startup anywhere is that revenue is ultimately your friend. I think that in the United States, last year was certainly a year when all of the issues around student data privacy became really, really important. And it became, I think that the education community sent a very clear message to any company that said, you know, if you want to offer materials for free or for freemium, that's fine. We're always happy to save money. But please do not build your business model around making use of student data or of, you know, kind of really using that access to students in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
That's
yeah.
not appropriate.
Same holds true in Canada.
And we don't want it. Absolutely. So I think that that message hopefully was received loud and clear by entrepreneurs everywhere. But the second point is that I think educators are also, as much as everybody wants to save money, and we all do, I think educators also want the assurance that companies are for real and that they have a business model, that they have revenue, that they have the kind of support that will enable them to keep going. Because when schools really start using a piece of technology and their educators become invested in learning how
right.
to use that technology, that's a huge commitment. And so it's tough if people are not sure that a company is going to exist in 2 years' time.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I think that the need and the priority around develop a business model that is, you know, obvious, clear, transparent, supportable, and demonstrates how you will fund this company kind of going forward is really, really important. The last piece And again, it's not unique to America or, you know, to anything, but I think it's just come through loud and clear, is that schools really do believe that they want to partner with companies. And when they say partner, what they mean is we don't want to just buy a product and then wave goodbye to you. We really need to have a relationship where we can count on you to be there, to answer questions, to support us, to really help us achieve our goal. At the end of the day, the goal for schools is student achievement. It's supporting
absolutely
our students. And companies need to kind of really grapple with that in a profound way. At the end of the day, for-profit companies are trying to survive, and so their priority is usually around, you know, let's sell our products. But unless companies are willing to genuinely engage with schools, partner with them, then too frequently we hear very sad stories of companies that have sold products to schools that the schools, that the teachers never adopt and that they don't wind up using.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, heartbreaking from the point of view of a taxpayer, from the point of view of a parent, from the point of view of the school. And so figuring out how to really build a relationship with schools so that the company is there, that the company is sustainable, is the name of the game here.
With that, I thank you so much for your time this morning, Betsy.
Robert, thank you. And again, you know, hats off to you and everything that you've done in Canada. You know, you are a role model for so many of us. And I really am looking forward to, again, seeing you on whichever side of the border you and I both happen to be on.
Absolutely. So. Well, you continue and inspire us as well with your excellent work. That was Betsy Corcoran, co-founder of EdSurge. My name is Robert Martellacci of the Mindshare Learning Report. And until next time, keep the digital learning curve steep.